And now, Virgin Most Powerful Radio is pleased to present Hands-On Apologetics with renowned Catholic author and apologist, Gary Matsuda.
Hi, everybody. Welcome. Yes, you are listening to Hands-On Apologetics, Virgin Most Powerful Radio's Apologetics Dojo. I'm Gary Matsuda, and welcome back for another excursion into explaining the faith with clarity, charity, and confidence. And, you know, we got a great show in store for you today. Roy Shoman is coming back to the dojo. You know, you might be familiar with Roy's work. Roy is a convert from Judaism. Actually, he had a very spectacular conversion to Catholicism. In fact, we talked about his conversion, I think the time before last he was on the show. I forgot to look up the date. But amazing conversion story. And we're going to continue our discussion about scientific apologetics. Okay, science and apologetics, you know, looking, explaining, defending the faith. What exactly is entailed in it? And Roy has a really interesting take on, you know, how we could explain and defend the faith in a way that makes sense to people, just average Joes, you know, ordinary people. And so we're going to talk to him on the other side of the break. We're also going to work on their finding the fallacy. And the finding the fallacy for today is a very fancy Latin name. It's cum hoc ergo propter hoc. So for you Latinists out there, you already know what the fallacy is. But for those who don't know Latin, this fallacy means with this, therefore, because of this. So it's one of those fallacies that pretty much explains what it is in its own title. And we're going to meet the early church father for today. And actually, today's church father, very important figure in Catholic apologetics, Polycarp of Smyrna. So Polycarp of Smyrna. So good stuff in store for us today. And as always, you're part of the conversation, especially when Roy comes on board. Give us a call at 888-526-2151. That's 888-526-2151. And we'd love to hear from you. And, of course, if perhaps you can't come on the air or you have some other question or you just like to share maybe a situation that you're in, you can also email your questions at questions@handsonapologetics.com. And we love to hear from you. I already have several letters in the dojo mailbox that we're going to get to eventually. It's just we've been having a string of great guests, and I just haven't had the opportunity to work it in. So who knows? Maybe perhaps next week we can go to the dojo mailbox and go through it. There's some great stuff. And I do see it every email that comes through. So, and I try to respond to each one. And but if you're waiting for it to be mentioned on the air, you know, thank you for your patience, because it does take a little while for us to find the room to fit it in. But your emails are important to us. So thank you very much. It's time now for our shout outs to all those watching on live stream on social media, Facebook and YouTube. Hello, everybody. Great to see familiar names. Love the emojis, by the way. Very nice. Very prayerful emojis, I might add. Maybe it's because Lent is coming to a close, huh? Let's see. Also, whenever you get a chance, there's lots of great guests, very interesting topics on the show. If you ever want to access one of our older shows, like let's say Roy Shoman's conversion story, all you have to do is just go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org website. That is the mothership website for all the programs here, and you can access Hands-On Apologetics, Jesus 911, Terry Jesse shows, all the good stuff that is produced by Virgin Most Powerful. And you can access former things and download them. You can share them. And we really appreciate it because, if you appreciate the programs that you hear, like Hands-On Apologetics, share it with friends, you know. Don't be antisocial on social media. Like us, share us. We really appreciate it. All right, so without further ado, why don't we jump into our finding of the fallacy for today? And like I said, the finding of the fallacy is cum hoc ergo propter hoc, which basically means with this, therefore, because of this. It's an informal fallacy. And it claims that there is a correlation, that whenever you have a correlation, it proves causation. Okay. In other words, whenever something happens along with another thing, this fallacy occurs when you claim that because of that, it happens at the same time, therefore one is causing the other. Okay. Which isn't necessarily true. For example, you know, a rooster may crow at sunrise every day, but that correlation of the rooster crowing and the sun rising doesn't make a causal connection. In other words, it's not the rooster crowing that causes the sun to rise, right? That would be cum hoc ergo propter hoc, that because the rooster crows with the sunrise, therefore the rooster crow is the cause of the sunrise. Now, that kind of a ridiculous example, but nevertheless, you know, I think it kind of illustrates this kind of fallacy. And there's a similar fallacy, and we've talked about it a few weeks ago. That's also a Latin name. It's called post hoc ergo propter hoc, or after this, therefore because of this. And these two are very similar, the cum hoc and the post hoc. What's the difference? Well, the cum hoc means, let's talk about the post hoc. The post hoc occurs whenever you reason that because something follows another thing, it must be the cause. In other words, because B follows A must be the cause of B. That's post hoc, because the focus of attention is the fact that one follows the other, and therefore it's falsely reasons that one is the cause of the other. Well, this one's a little different. It doesn't argue that because it follows, it argues because it occurs at the same time, there would be a corollary. Okay. Now, the thing, and this is a little slippery with the cum hoc ergo propter hoc one day, with this because of this fallacy, because it's possible that there could be a causal correlation. In fact, most times that's kind of a red flag indicator that maybe one thing is causing another thing because it tends to happen at the same time. The problem is, and what makes this a fallacy, is that it doesn't necessarily follow. There can be things that just so happen to be occurring at the same time that have no causal link between them whatsoever. So the important thing is not just to go with the correlation, right, that they happen at the same time. What's important is that you dig in and try to say, okay, is there evidence that one is causing the other? And if you could do that, you destroy this fallacy. And by the way, this is a very common fallacy amongst non-believers. They're known as mythicists. They believe that, or they argue that really Christianity is just an amalgamation of pagan beliefs that occurred during the time of Christ, that it was kind of put together and fabricated. Well, that's the cum hoc ergo propter hoc, namely because these other things are around, therefore they're the cause of the thing. And again, you have to go and look for a causal link. All right, very good. Let's move on to Meet the Early Church Father. And today's Early Church Father is Polycarp of Smyrna. He lived around AD 6970 to AD 55 or 56, somewhere around there. He's a very important Early Church Father. He's was Bishop of Smyrna. He's one of the Apostolic Fathers. And he was a hearer or a disciple of the Apostle St. John. So, you know, he has intimate ties with the apostles themselves. He also was a friend of Ignatius of Antioch, which is another early church father we talked about. And he received a letter from Ignatius while Ignatius was on his way to martyrdom. Polycarp was also martyred. He died at the age of 86, sometime around the year 155 or 156, very, very early on. We have two works concerning Polycarp of Smyrna. The first one is the letter to the Philippians. We have a letter of his. He wrote several letters, but this is the only one that's survived the ages. And what is preserved is actually a single letter, although it's really two letters in one, because it appears that the first letter consists of chapter 13 and possibly 14. And this is basically a cover letter that was given along with Ignatius of Antioch's letter when he arrived at Rome to the Philippians. And also the second half of the letter appears to be a standalone letter. So it's actually two letters in one. It's a fascinating letter. It's available online. You can feel free to read it, and I recommend it. So basically, the second letter would consist of chapters 1 through 12. And let's see. And another thing, too, and this is interesting, and we'll close the segment with this. Polycarp also happens to be the first known Christian to have a martyrdom recorded in writing. Their martyrdom recorded in writing. And that work is called The Martyrdom of St. Polycarp, appropriate enough. Also written AD 155 through 157. And it's the oldest extant and authentic account of a martyrdom. And it's in the form of a letter from the Church of Smyrna to the Christian community in Philemon in Greater Phrygia. It's a very interesting portrayal of the trial and execution of St. Polycarp. It's also available online for free. So since it's Lent, and it's always wonderful to read the lives of the saints in Lent, here's a way where you can avail yourself of a very early church writing you can use with apologetics and also feed your soul. So check it out, Martyrdom of St. Polycarp. Where can you get it? Well, basically you could Google it, and I'm sure there's dozens and dozens, if not hundreds of sites out there. My favorite site, by the way, I mentioned it a few times, is newadvent.org. They have all the writings of the fathers there. So regardless of where you get it, check it out. Great stuff. All right, coming on the other side of the break, we're going to be talking with Roy Shulman about scientific apologetics. Stay tuned.
This is Terry Barber inviting you, all the men, to a men's conference June 15th at the Sacred Heart Chapel. This is going to be a day where we're going to talk about true masculinity. You know, there's a problem in the Catholic Church today. We have very few men who love the Catholic faith. And I know a lot of the wives that I'm listening to right now are saying, I want my husband to be on fire for the faith. Send him to the men's conference. Your son, send him to the men's conference by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. That's June 15th. When your husband comes back from this conference or your son, they're going to have a different view about their Catholic faith because they're going to meet three men who love Jesus and his bride, the church, and are going to instill in them a love for Christ and his church, the Eucharist, Our Lady. Bring them to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. Sign up there or call 877-526-2151. Full sheen ahead.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And welcome back, everybody. Hands-On Apologetics. Sharing the faith, explaining the faith. That's what apologetics is all about. And it's important for us to learn as much as we can and how to share the faith in a way that makes sense to the contemporary world. And excuse me, coming on the show is Roy Shoman. Roy Shoman is an author who was born in a suburb of New York City in a conservative Jewish family. He was educated in his formation. He received by some of the most prominent rabbis in contemporary American Jewry. His secular education includes a Bachelor of Science from MIT and an MBA, magna cum laude, from Harvard Business School. Midway through his career in teaching and consulting, which also happened while he was appointed to be faculty of Harvard Business School, he experienced an unexpected and instantaneous conversion to Christianity that led him to a dramatic refocus of his activities. And since then, he's pursued theological studies at several seminaries. He's helped produce and host a Catholic talk show. And also, he's written several books, among which is Salvation from the Jews. And as I mentioned also, it's great to read The Lives of the Saints during Lent. I highly recommend his other book, Honey from the Rock, 16 Jews Find the Sweetness of Christ. His website, if you want more information, is salvationisfromthejews.com. Roy Shoman, welcome to Hands on Apologetics.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. Thanks for the introduction. But you left out the fact that I'm a direct competitor with my own radio show on Radio Maria, so let me just mention, you know, putting that short plug.
Yes, absolutely.
Saturday afternoons, 3 to 4 p.m. on Eastern time, that is, on radiomaria.us. And it's also a call-in show. It's called Jesus, the Promised Messiah of Judaism. And I talk about other things also, but the core theme is the relationship between Judaism and Catholicism. So anyway, but thanks for having me on, not to talk about that today, but to talk about another very intense interest of mine, which is debunking the myth that somehow the scientific approach would run counter to the Catholic faith rather than supporting it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the beautiful thing is you're on Saturday, and I'm Monday through Friday. So actually, we're not head-to-head competitors. We're working in concert together. So, so listeners, when you want more, you know, or even better and more deeper thought, full programming, tune into Roy's show. But yeah, Roy, you know, that's an interest of mine too, because it seems like the culture, you know, the culture is very much scientifically minded, and we are influenced by the culture in lots of different ways, aren't we?
First of all, it's a little bit of a hobby horse of mine, but it uses the word scientific. In other words, I would argue that our culture is actually not scientifically minded, but there is a kind of a umbrella over our culture, which claims that it's scientifically minded. And if I may kind of launch in, I want to kind of paint a little bit of the backdrop, which is, I hope that your listeners all know that the entire story of life on earth between birth and death is really a battle between God and Satan for the human soul. And those are the stakes, and that's what it's all about. And every human being is going to someday die, and he's going to end up in a very, very wonderful situation or in a very terrible situation. And God is, I don't want to say he's working as hard as he can. That's not really fair. But God is on one side working to bring people to heaven, and Satan is on the other side working to bring people to hell. So it's this tremendous battlefield. But when an army sets out against another army for a real physical battle, they want to choose the battlefield. In other words, you know, in the old days, it would be advantageous for an army to be on the uphill side rather than the downhill side, so the arrows could travel better or the rocks could travel better or whatever. It would be advantageous, for instance, to, you know, not be trapped between, you know, with a river to your back or whatever, so you couldn't retreat and so forth. You know, the choice of the battlefield is very important, and the setting of the battlefield is very important. And in this spiritual battle, there is an analogous battlefield, which is our culture. So, you know, although in a sense the battle is over each individual human soul, it takes place on the battlefield, and the battlefield is our culture, is our society. To use a philosophical term, is the zeitgeist, the spirit of the times, the attitude of the times. And I think the enemy has really taken over that our contemporary culture, our spirit of the times, And the way he has done it to a large part, to a large extent, is by claiming that there is something unscientific about having faith, and we are in an age of science, and you really have no right to believe something that runs against science, and science is incompatible with the faith. So if, and people absorb this, you know, and I remember grammar school, you know, you basically get this catechesis in how all of human advancement comes from science and comes from this rational view, and everything we have came from, you know, scientific discoveries and all the technology and everything. And you're throwing yourself back into the dark ages if you reject science for faith. So I think that this false accusation that somehow the faith is unscientific is really, really, really important a tool in the enemy's hands in turning us away from God.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, the whole idea that times past were dark and, you know, primitive, and that we are on this precipice of light, enlightenment, and, you know, the top of technology, it's itself kind of self-serving too.
Yes, but I'm not a Luddite. I think yeah. Technology, you know, is wonderful. I'm very grateful every day for indoor plumbing, for instance,
right,
and hot running water and so forth. But the problem is that the, you know, benefits that technology have brought are ascribed to this quote scientific attitude, which in turn is described as being or is considered to be contrary to the faith. And in order to make sense of the truth of the situation, I think it's necessary to consider the change in what scientific means, because, you know, the enemy also wins a lot of battles by taking over our language. We see this in the pro-choice and so forth. Mm-hmm. You know, they take over the language, they choose words carefully, they bring new meanings into words, and without noticing it, people's attitudes and, you know, opinions change as a result. And right. The concept of scientific and science has been hijacked, because historically, going back a couple of hundred years, science was sort of defined as, quote, worthy of belief based on objective evidence. There's nothing wrong with that. That's wonderful. You have objective evidence that's not subjective to the person, to, you know, the individual characteristics of the person seeing it necessarily, but it's objective somehow, and it's worthy of belief. St. Thomas Aquinas, who I hope is kind of a bedrock of what all of us do as Catholic apologists, defined scientific knowledge in the following way. He said scientific knowledge is obtained when observable phenomena and their properties are accounted for in terms of their causes. In other words, you have observation, you have the observation of phenomena, and you have their explanations in terms of their causes. All of this is absolutely wonderful. All of this actually will support the truth of the Catholic faith, which is where, you know, I hope we get to. But rather than this historic definition of science and scientific knowledge, we have, over the last 100 years, had this kind of hijacked by a philosophy. I don't want to get too kind of deep in the weeds, but it's often referred to as logical positivism, which is essentially, and I'll read a standard definition of logical positivism, quote, a movement in Western philosophy whose central thesis is that only statements verifiable through reproducible experiments are meaningful. So you see, the definition of scientific has been shifted from worthy of belief based on objective evidence to verifiable through reproducible experiments. And what's the problem with this? The problem with this is that everything having to do with free will, whether the free will of a human being, the free will of God, the free will of an angel, or the free will of a demon, everything having to do with the free will is not arbitrarily reproducible through an experiment. Because if you ask somebody to do something, one time they may do it and one time they may not. Right. If you ask God to do something, one time he may do it and one time he may not. and so forth. So by definition, once the ground rules have been changed to this logical positivism, it has to be subject to reproducible experiments, or else we can't consider it true. You've by definition eliminated the miracle, the possibility of miracles. Because miracles, what are miracles? They are phenomena or actions which go beyond or contradict the natural physical laws because they are performed by someone who can go beyond the natural physical laws, whether that's an angel or a demon or God. So with this shift in the definition of scientific, what the enemy has succeeded in doing in our culture is defining away the possibility of miracles, not showing they don't exist, not showing that they're not worthy of belief, but essentially defining them as not possible of existing.
Hmm. Yeah, very good.
Have it made sense?
Oh, it makes perfect sense. Like, for example, let's say I have an Uncle Fred that I never met, and I want to find out if he really is out there, so I keep writing letters. And sometimes I get a letter back, sometimes I don't. So, you know, if I want to approach it scientifically, it's not reproducible. Every time I write a letter, he responds. Or it could be that Uncle Fred moved. Pardon?
It's worse than that because the concept of reproducible results, they have to be reproducible by anyone.
Yeah.
So your Uncle Fred would have to answer a letter from me.
Right. Yeah, very good. Yeah, so when you're trying to ascertain a volitional subject, someone who acts, then you can't reduce it down to a scientific score sheet where, different circumstances, they will respond the same way.
I'm going to be a little bit pedantic. You said scientific. I don't want that word scientific to be used in a way that restricts it to logical positivism. I call that scientism, not science. If you define science to exclude in a way that produces entirely circular reasoning and excludes the very family of phenomena you want to investigate, that's not scientific. That's almost like a faith-based bias. That's an arbitrary stacking of the deck to produce a predetermined conclusion. So it's very unscientific.
Yeah, very good, very good. Well, hey, we're coming up on the break. I hear the music coming up. We're talking with Roy Shoman and about science and belief in apologetics, how to share your faith in a culture that's soaked in legal positivism. You listen to Hands on Apologetics. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
This is Terry Barber inviting you, all the men, to a men's conference June 15th at the Sacred Heart Chapel. This is going to be a day where we're going to talk about true masculinity. You know, there's a problem in the Catholic Church today. We have very few men who love the Catholic faith. And I know a lot of the wives that I'm listening to right now are saying, I want my husband to be on fire for the faith. Send him to the men's conference. Your son, send him to the men's conference by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. That's June 15th. When your husband comes back from this conference or your son, they're going to have a different view about their Catholic faith because they're going to meet three men who love Jesus and his bride, the church, and are going to instill in them a love for Christ and his church, the Eucharist, Our Lady. Bring them to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. Sign up there or call 877-526-2151. Full sheen ahead.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, catholicrc.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
This is Jesse Romero. You're listening to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda on Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
About science apologetics, sharing your faith. And Roy, you know, I want to ask you about miracles, but before I do, during the break, it occurred to me there's a great example of what you just said. There's a pop atheist who argued, well, if God is good, then I imagine that if I prayed for something that's good, he would automatically grant it. And I prayed and he didn't grant it. Therefore, we could prove that God doesn't exist. That's essentially the same thing we're talking about, this kind of legal, logical positivism.
Yeah, it's definitely a rather egregious example of it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically God is a vending machine that if we put the right coin in, you know, he'll spit out whatever we ask for. You know, it's that's kind of what this logical positivism kind of reduces us to, is to try to come up with some sort of mechanical thing, which is impossible.
Well, what it does is it takes every instance of a verifiable physical miracle. For instance, you know, like a medical healing at Lourdes, and you have, you know, somebody with a face eaten away by cancer who goes into the baths and come out of the baths with a perfectly healed face, you know, and no trace of the damage. And then that's obviously a miracle. That's obviously an intervention of something outside of the physical. But that doesn't mean that you can bring 10 people with, you know, cancer on their face to the baths, and if all 10 of them don't come out clean, the first thing never happened.
Yeah, right. You know, exactly.
That's ludicrous. But that is the logical conclusion of this. It's hard to avoid technical terms, but of this epistemology, of this approach to knowing what's true, of approach to knowing knowledge. So I think in a way it's worse than any single example, because what it does is it's like if I went into a court case and I was defined as a liar beforehand and my accuser was defined as telling the truth, it wouldn't matter what I said, because by definition, everything should be dismissed. And it's kind of like that. Everything supernatural, everything out of the physical deterministic realm gets dismissed out of hand. There's no point in going to court.
Yeah, it defines opposition of existence.
You love and I love G.K. Chesterton because he has such a exact and penetrating and at the same time kind of humorous way of encapsulating these absurdities. So with your indulgence, let me read a quote of his about this.
Yes, please do.
Which is, quote, "The question of whether miracles ever occur is a question of common sense and of ordinary historical imagination, not of any final physical experiment. One may surely dismiss that quite brainless piece of pedantry, which talks about the need for, quote, scientific conditions, close quote, in connection with alleged spiritual phenomena. If you choose to say, I will believe that Miss Brown called her fiancé my heart's love and desire, who I love passionately with every fiber of my being, on the condition that she will repeat the words before 17 psychologists, then I shall reply, very well, if those are your conditions, you will never get the truth. For she certainly will not say it under those conditions. It is just as unscientific to be surprised that in an unsympathetic atmosphere, certain extraordinary sympathies do not arise. It is as if I said that I could not tell if there was a fog because the air was not clear enough, or if I insist on perfect sunlight in order to see a solar eclipse. You're setting up a set of conditions that predetermine a negative outcome.
Yes. Yeah, very good. So what is a miracle?
I would say that a miracle is an event in which the normal physical laws are suspended by a supernatural intervention, an intervention from the spiritual world, which is either an act of God or the act of an angel or the act of a demon. I would say, yeah, that's what I say a miracle is. By definition, a miracle is not a mechanical progression of physical events. It's coming from the outside, or else it wouldn't be a miracle. And if it's coming from the outside, it's coming from a free actor on the outside, which is why it's not subject to arbitrary reproduction.
Yeah, very good. And we kind of do that on a lower level. For example, we can circumvent gravity by grabbing a falling pen, and, you know, before it hits the floor. So it's, you know, volitional, you know, free will action that, in a sense, counteracts, if you will, or changes something that would normally follow naturally, like a pen falling because of gravity.
That's a good analogy.
Okay.
That's probably what a miracle is. I mean, that's, you know, when God, you know, stops a disease and reverses it, or makes the sun spin in the sky and crash to the earth, or anything else that he does. I mean, much less turn unleavened bread into the body, blood, soul, and divinity of God. That's right. That's exactly right. That it's a suspension of the physical unfolding of the what would otherwise be the physical chain of causality by an intervention from outside.
Yeah, very good. So, so if you drop a pen 10 times, you know, with the scientist observing, waiting for the pen to, you know, cease from falling, that won't necessarily happen because the person who stopped it may not be there or may not wish to grab it, you know. It just doesn't hold up to what you said, this legal, or I keep saying legal, but logical positivism.
Yeah. Anyway, so the other side of this coin is that given that the enemy has kind of brainwashed our culture to say that it's unscientific or, you know, it's irrational to believe in miracles, God has kind of, you know, raised the bets on the other side by, I believe, giving us an unprecedented number of physically verifiable miracles that very specifically attested the truth of the Catholic faith in our day. I think actually specifically in response to the scientific bias or the scientism bias of our culture. Yeah. And I mean, we have the apparitional miracles, but maybe in a way the most physically dramatic may be the Eucharistic miracles, where a consecrated host takes on all of the physical characteristics of human tissue, of human muscle tissue, of human blood, heart muscle tissue, and also of human blood. And I know there's some of these Eucharistic miracles that date back to the Middle Ages. Probably Lanciano is the most famous, and that's from the 8th century. But I was very surprised and gratified to find out that there was a very dramatic Eucharistic miracle in 1996 in Buenos Aires, which was subjected to tremendous scientific examination and investigation and passed with flying colors as just as dramatic a Eucharistic miracle as Lanciano, in which the host turned into, you know, human flesh and human blood, and was subjected, of course, to all of today's technology to debunk it or investigate it, and it passed. And then one even more recently in 2008 in Poland, similarly subjected to tremendous physical scientific investigation and, completely supernatural and totally proven to be, so to speak. So I don't know if we have time for me to maybe briefly describe maybe that 2008 one or not, but...
Oh, we got about 3 minutes.
3 minutes. Okay. 3 minutes. Take a deep breath and launch in. Okay. October 12th, 2008, Father Jacek celebrated Mass in Sokokla, Poland. I know no Polish, so forgive my pronunciation. And he picked up a discarded host, which had fallen to the ground or had been put on the ground, and put it in a liturgical vessel filled with water so that it would dissolve. so that it could be disposed of properly, which is the proper protocol. And then he left it in the safe for 2 weeks. And after 2 weeks, not only had the host not dissolved, but a blood stain, a shape resembling a blood stain, had appeared on it. And then not only a blood stain, but something that resembled organic material. So the bishop was informed. The bishop asked two professors of medicine at the University of Bialystok to conduct an analysis of the fragment of the host. And they were not told what it was. The two worked separately. They arrived at the same conclusion that they had observed the presence of, quote, many typical biomorphological indicators of heart muscle tissue, and as well as visible damage in the form of tiny ruptures to the fibers, which are only observed in living fibers, and they show evidence of rapid spasms of the heart muscle in the period just before death. They confirmed this is living heart muscle tissue. I can go on to more details, but in fact, they found in the heart muscle evidence that the source of the tissue had died through I'll drop that. But anyway, they found a number of very specific aspects of that heart muscle tissue that were consistent with Jesus having died in agony on the cross, and that heart muscle being from the heart that underwent that. Wow. And also interesting was that the heart muscle, the host has partially turned into heart muscle and partially was still host. So so the fibers of the heart muscle were still connected to the fibers of the bread and water made host. And the report declared that this extraordinary phenomenon of interabsorption of the heart muscle tissue with the host, observed under the microscope and also by electron microscopy, proves that no human manipulation of the sample could have taken place. In fact, the structure of the myocardial fibers and the structure of the bread were so tightly bound that no human intervention could have caused it. And again, we're talking about 2008 to 2010 when this study was done. It's not medieval legend.
Right. Wow. Oh, that... Yeah, I'm not familiar with that. Actually, I hear the music coming up. Beautiful job, by the way, fitting in 3 minutes. You listen to Hands on Apologetics. We're talking with Roy Shoman about scientific approach in apologetics. Stay tuned, folks. There's a lot more to come.
This is Terry Barber inviting you, all the men, to a men's conference June 15th at the Sacred Heart Chapel. This is going to be a day where we're going to talk about true masculinity. You know, there's a problem in the Catholic Church today. We have very few men who love the Catholic faith. And I know a lot of the wives that I'm listening to right now are saying, I want my husband to be on fire for the faith. Send him to the men's conference. Your son, send him to the men's conference by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. That's June 15th. When your husband comes back from this conference or your son, they're going to have a different view about their Catholic faith because they're going to meet three men who love Jesus and his bride, the church, and are going to instill in them a love for Christ and his church, the Eucharist, Our Lady. Bring them to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. Sign up there or call 877-526-2151. Full sheen ahead.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber.
Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And welcome back to Hands-On Apologetics. We are talking with Roy Shulman about, you know, scientific approach, a truly authentic scientific approach to apologetics. And earlier, Roy was pointing out how science has kind of been redefined in such a way as to exclude the possibility of miracles or miraculous happenings that are caused by volitional agents like God or angels and so on. And before the break, Roy was talking about this Eucharistic miracle. Roy, where would someone, where could they go to get more information on that? Because I wasn't familiar with it.
It's kind of a sideways answer, and I hate to recommend the enemy, but I would say just Google, the Eucharistic miracle. The priest's name was Father. I apologize to any Polish listeners, Father Jacek Ingielewicz. Anyway, Jacek is his first name. And last name is Ingielewicz. And I suspect that if you Google Eucharistic miracle and his name, you'd get it. It took place in the Church of St. Anthony of Padua in, spelling the town name, Sokolka, Poland, in 2008. So really all I could suggest is Googling that. I wrote it up for the newsletter of the it's neither here nor there, but I'm an oblate at a Benedictine monastery that puts out a monthly newspaper, so I wrote it up for their newsletter, but that's not easily findable if you're not already on their mailing list.
Okay. Well, hey, with that name, I'm sure it's probably unique enough that a Google search will definitely bring up some information.
Pull it up.
Yeah.
So the if I can go on a little bit with my rant, and if we have time, I might mention another one in Buenos Aires, which interestingly took place under Bishop Bergoglio, who's now Pope Francis.
Yep.
But the bottom line is, again, encapsulated in a quote by G.K. Chesterton, which is, quote, "Those who believe in miracles believe in them, rightly or wrongly, on the basis of the evidence for them. Those who do not believe in miracles deny them, rightly or wrongly, on the basis of a dogma against them." You know,
yeah, that's beautiful.
Is required to deny the miracles, and because the believers are believing in them because they have the evidence. The deniers have no evidence to contradict it. They just have their faith that miracles can't exist.
Yeah, that's true. And in fact, usually one of the common response is that, well, they'll say, well, eventually science will become so sophisticated that we'll be able to provide a scientific explanation for that. And so in a sense, it's kind of an act of faith in science that eventually, you know, it'll be disproved.
It's an act of faith, and it's also such irresponsible hand waving. You know,
yeah.
I mean, it's the opposite of science. The essence of science is you look at the evidence, you look at the data, you form a theory that can explain it. If it can explain it successfully, it's a good theory. If it can't, you have to throw it away. They're saying we have no alternative theory, but don't worry, we'll come up with one someday. And meanwhile, you're not supposed to believe what you're seeing.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a radio host in Boston, Howie Carr, who's very witty. And he's always saying, who do you believe, me or your lying eyes? And that's the situation, you know. Who do you believe? You know, the skeptic or your own lying eyes that see the miracle?
Yeah, and that's odd because usually they pride themselves on being so empirical, you know, so, you know, that hard facts and you know, I only believe what I can see. Except when things like this come up, and then all of a sudden, Zoom, you know, it's, well, science will explain that someday.
Or they make up the most illogical things like Stephen Hawking, the great theoretical physicist, when he's confronted with the fact that how did life begin on Earth in the absence of God? How did you get life from non-life, which is actually impossible to explain? His explanation was seeds arrived on Earth from another planet.
Yeah.
That's not much of a solution, right? I mean, this is a guy with an IQ probably over 200. How can he be so stupid?
Yeah.
You know, it's a totally circular. It doesn't even address the issue. Even if life on Earth came from seeds from another planet, that doesn't answer how you got life in the first place.
That's true. You know, I had a similar thing where I was talking to an atheist, and I was talking about one of those miraculous healings at Lourdes. And his response was, well, maybe it could be space aliens. You know, these invisible aliens came, and they're the ones that healed them. And that just threw me for a loop. It's like, you mean like little green men, you know? Yeah, amazing.
Exactly. They're not embarrassed by these transparent hand wavings that pass for alternative explanations. One of the ones that bothers me the most, because it's so kind of philosophically empty, is this tendency, when there is no explanation, to simply make up a word that is substitute for an explanation. For instance, with the miracle of Fatima, where 100,000 people saw the sun dance in the sky and crash to Earth, these skeptics will say, oh, well, that was just a mass hallucination. So there's an explanation. You don't have to believe in God. It was a mass hallucination. The problem is they just made up that word, mass hallucination. I mean, it doesn't exist in any other context. It doesn't have any existence, mass hallucinations. There are no mass hallucinations. There are no examples of mass hallucinations, except for this miraculous event that they wanted to say wasn't a miracle. So they made up a word to be an alternative.
Yeah, in a way, they kind of they fall into their own trap, because the only evidence for a mass hallucination to happen can't be repeated, you know, and verified scientifically.
Yeah, exactly.
Because this is the only instance that ever happened.
So, I know we're coming to the end of the show. I don't know exactly how many minutes we have left, but you know, one could probably rattle off very quickly, you know, 20 really physical, you know, miracles with physical, objective, persisting evidence. These Eucharistic miracles, the medical miracles at Lourdes. I like exorcisms, because I think they're fun. Don't ask me why. But an exorcism have a lot of physical evidence of the miraculous, because, first of all, nowadays they're all tape recorded, so you know what's going on, and it's preserved. And the person, who may be an illiterate, you know, peasant woman, will start speaking in Latin, will speak in Hebrew, will respond to the priest speaking in Latin. I mean, in other words, understanding what he's saying. And even there's something called a preliminary exorcism. I forgot the technical term. But the first step that many exorcists do before they start on the exorcism is they will simply be in a room with the person who's suspected to be possessed. And without showing anything on their face, without moving their lips, without saying anything, they will simply form a thought in their mind like, you know, in the name of Jesus, I command you to leave her. And if the person is really possessed, they'll go bonkers. They'll go bananas. They'll react very specifically to that mental, you know, that mental sentence that the priest has formed, with no no materialistic explanation for how they could be responding to it. They will respond to a hidden crucifix in the room. They will respond to hidden holy water or relics. You know, without any materialistic explanation. There's just no And you know, this is a topic for another show, but we haven't even touched on evolution and the fact that
right.
the fact that life itself, as well as the beauty and diversity of the physical world, actually also should be seen as proof of God's existence.
Yeah. You know, going back with the exorcism, it's interesting you brought that up because last week I had Father Patrick Collins on the show who has done exorcisms, and he shared a story where he was just praying over. This woman brought her best friend to be with her because she was scared, and he just did a deliverance prayer, and silently in his mind he asked for Our Lady to give him a sign whether or not she's been truly possessed. And he said as soon as he finished that thought in his head, her friend pipes up in a very low, gravelly voice and says, "Don't call upon that woman." So all of a sudden it's like, wow, you know, his prayers were answered. So let's see. Well, Roy, how can people get a hold of, all the great things you do? Is there a website they can go to?
Well, yes, I have a website. It is called Salvation is from the Jews.com, because that's the title of my first book, which is Salvation is from the Jews. That has all the information on my radio show. It also, by the way, has the podcasts of all my past radio shows. And it has information on my books, and it has my speaking schedule of where I'll be speaking in the near future. I'll say very quickly, I hadn't been prepared for this, but I'll be in Bloomington, Indiana, I think the first weekend in May. So if anyone's listening from that area and is interested in it, go to my website, salvationisfromthejews.com, and they can find out about it. I'll be in the Boston, Massachusetts area at the end of April. And so if anyone's in that area, they can go to the website and look at it and so forth. But that's the best way to find out about what's going on with my apostolate.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. It's been a joy.
All right. And that was Roy Shulman, everybody. Definitely go to salvationisfromthejews.com, his website. It's got lots of great information. And, you know, he's an excellent author, speaker. If you're in those areas, check him out. Coming up tomorrow, we are going to have a popular YouTuber, Mathema, coming back on the show. Mathema is going to help us answer common atheistic objections. And also this Friday, our favorite Maronite Rite Catholic apologist, Paul Thomas, is coming on to talk about how to overcome the fear of going to confession. It's Lent, folks, and it's a great time to avail ourselves of that sacrament. And it's hard to believe. Whenever I have Roy on the show, the program just flies. The program's almost, it's almost over. So thank you so much for listening. Coming up next, the dynamic duo of talk radio, the High Intensity Catholic Talk, the Terry and Jesse Show, is coming up. And it's time for me to shut down the Midwest Command Center here and power down the lights here at the dojo. I want to thank everybody for tuning in, listening. Appreciate you supporting Virgin Most Powerful Radio. Please, with your prayers, share us on social media. Tell your friends about it. And also, we appreciate your financial support as well. Anyway, everybody have a great day. And we'll see you in the dojo tomorrow. God bless.
In the 1990s, I lived and worked in Hollywood. But when my wife Betty's mom took ill, we relocated to Orange County. And it was during this time in our lives that I converted to Catholicism. Once my eyes were opened to the truth, I couldn't learn enough about the faith. But I had less free time than ever, especially with a long commute. That's when I discovered the real value of Catholic audio. Listening to cassette tapes transformed my daily commute into a miniature retreat. And that's the beauty of Virgin Most Powerful Radio today. Since the podcasts are archived, you can listen anytime on our smartphone app. I know how listening to Catholic audio can bring you closer to Christ and His Church. So I encourage you to visit the App Store or go to vmpr.org and download the app today. It just might change your life. I'm Matthew Arnold for Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio, sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.